Circle presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine. With your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist and band leader, Andrew Leahy. Andrew not only has his own band, but he also plays guitar for Elizabeth Cook, amongst others. In our conversation, Andrew tells us about his upcoming show in Mexico City, which is going to allow him to see Oasis while he's there. Andrew discusses his new album, Kick, Move, Shake, and the personnel on the album. Andrew describes growing up in Richmond, Virginia, playing fraternity parties, and then moving to New York to work as a music journalist for Spin Magazine, and what eventually brought him to Nashville. Andrew takes us through his time in Nashville as a solo artist, and then backing other artists up as a lead guitarist and band leader. Andrew describes what it's like being a band leader in Nashville, losing band members to other bands, and what it's like being the guitarist in other bands. Andrew tells us about what it's like being his own manager and agent, and what it's like being Elizabeth Cook's guitarist playing some pretty high-profile gigs. Andrew takes us through his gear and where he gets his gear worked on, and Andrew tells us the advice that Neil Casal gave him, which he still heeds to this day, and Andrew gives some advice to young musicians. Finally, Andrew tells us about how he keeps himself sane, yoga, and how that influenced his new album. To find out more about Andrew, you can go to his website, andrewleahymusic.com. That's AndrewLeahymusic.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend, Andrew.
Hey there.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. It's good to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
That's a cool space you got there.
Well, it's not as clean as yours. And
Well, it's got cooler stuff on the wall. It's got more stuff on the wall.
True. So you're playing a show in Mexico City?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I'm going over there just... Yeah, I'm going over to Mexico City with some friends to go to the Oasis concert.
Oh, okay.
And then when we're over there, we're just going to play a show as well. It's going to be cool.
Excellent. Have you been to Mexico City before?
No, I've been to Mexico. I've played a lot, but it's either like in the Cancun area, because there's all those resorts, and you know, like bands will have like a festival down there. Like we're going to go down and do a Blackberry Smoke event with Elizabeth Cook, because I play in her band.
Yeah.
And then I played in Rocky Point a lot, playing with this band Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. And they've got a space there as well. But I've never been to Mexico City. I'm intimidated by it, but in a good way. It's just so huge.
Yeah.
25 million or something.
Yeah. and what are you going to do for gear?
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. What are you going to do for gear while you're there?
It's just going to be an acoustic show, and I'm trading it, or I'm sharing it with my friend Paul McDonald. So I guess I'm just going to bring my Martin and, you know, and like have it with me for the rest of the time, which... is what it is, and just, you know, play an acoustic gig, which I don't like to do a lot, but I think it makes sense here.
Yeah, there's not a lot of acoustic stuff on your record.
On the new one, there's hardly any.
Yeah. well, I love the album. It's not what I expected from Elizabeth Cook's guitarist, but I love it.
Well, yeah, man, it's not, well, I appreciate you saying that. It's really not completely aligned with what I've done in the past either. All the other albums have been much more Americana, but I don't know, just I didn't really grow up listening to Americana music, and then you know, I definitely went through a big phase of it, of listening to it all the time. I've just always liked how like 80s influenced pop music sounds. I like the kind of all-encompassing, you know, nature of the production, and I just wanted to do something like that.
Yeah. It's cool. And I mean, it not only 80s, but like, you know, like late 70s kind of Steely Dan, or just late 70s, you know, more I don't know, Toto maybe a little bit, you know, whatever.
Sure, I'll take it. I mean, I love a lot of music that I know other people would consider cheesy. I mean, so I think there's even some like solo era Don Henley in there. I think there's some Bryan Adams in there. I think there's Hall & Oates, INXS. Yeah, like I am a guitarist by trade, but I also play keys. And I just, you know, I thought it would be cool to kind of see what other space a guitar could occupy on my albums. I mean, at my heart, I'm a Tom Petty guy. So I think of, you know, like really big ringing chords. And there's a bit of that still, but again, I just wanted to kind of explore, you know, how the guitar could operate in a different context.
Sure. And so where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and went to college in Virginia, and then went to New York after college. And that's kind of where everything began in terms of my career, up in New York.
Okay. Yeah. And where'd you go to college?
I went to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. And I had a cover band there called Hobson's Choice. And we played a couple of originals, but we would, you know, play the frat parties and we would have to play from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And we learned that it was just kind of, a, you know, like a best if we began with the cover. If we began with the originals and then like all the diehards could come at the beginning and then leave before it got crazy. But, you know, come 1 a.m., you're playing to a bunch of young co-eds and everybody just wants to hear Outkast and the, you know, like the Darkness and Lynyrd Skynyrd and whatever, you know, whatever songs you learn when you're, you know, playing a frat party at UVA.
Right on. And so what drove you up to New York?
So the other half of my career, you know, my music career, it's always been music journalism. So like I had been doing that school. I got hired by the newspaper in my hometown. It was called the Richmond Times-Dispatch. I got hired as like a music reviewer. So I was going to concerts and writing about them. And I did that all throughout college as well. And then I just got an offer to go to New York and do that at Spin magazine.
Wow.
And that magazine, especially during that era, was just... You know, it was amazing. It had a great team behind it, and it had some really rock star writers like Chuck Klosterman was there still, you know, like Dave Itzkoff, you know, like David Eggers was like writing the kind of like article at the back of the magazine every week or every month. It was just amazing. So I went up there to do that, and kind of you know, I did music journalism for a number of years after that. And, you know, I just, you know, kind of one day I looked around and realized, what am I doing writing about, you know, all these people who are accomplishing what I want to accomplish? And is it even fair that I'm saying whether their album is good or not? Like, it's awesome that they have the balls just to put it out. And I once had those balls and now I don't because, you know, I like having a retirement plan and I like working in an office. So I decided it was time to take a leap. And that's when I came to Nashville.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
And so would you come to Nashville without a job or anything? Yeah. You just said Nashville's the place and I'm heading that direction.
Kind of. Well, I came to Nashville with my partner, my wife, who had a job, and she was remarkably cool about saying, yeah, you want to play music? You know, like we can make that work. So, you know, I came here and continued to work as a freelance writer. And eventually I got hired by Rolling Stone because like Rolling Stone opened an office here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that. But at that point, I was also on the road, you know, more or less full time. And Rolling Stone hired me by the hour. I think it was 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. day. So I'd wake up like on the road before anybody else in the hotel room was awake. And I'd, you know, like write about articles. It was always country stuff because of Nashville. So it would be like, you know, Garth Brooks went and like did this one thing, write an article about it.
Yeah.
So I was doing that and, you know, then getting the band up and getting everybody in the van, making somebody else drive until 2 p.m. when I could take over.
Yeah,
it was kind of a crazy experience. But yeah, to answer your question, I came to town just as a freelance writer and, you know, with like stars in my eyes that.
What was your first guitar playing gig?
For others or just in general, kind of when I hit Nashville, how did
just,
that
yeah,
begin?
Yeah, we could start with just yourself by yourself.
You know, before I came here, my wife and I had spent a couple years up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was writing for this music website called allmusic.com, which was a place I'd wanted to work at for years. It was a really cool job.
Yeah.
But again, that job was almost pure music reviews. So again, I was just writing about other people who were doing what I wanted to, you know, be doing myself.
Yep.
So I came here and my goal was to just play music as, you know, like the front man of my own band. Mm-hmm. So I got that off and running really, really fast. And then somewhere along the way, I began to get asked if I would play guitar for other people or harmonize for other people.
Wow.
Which I didn't really expect because, like, I'm not being modest here. I was not a good guitarist when I came to town. I was a rhythm guitarist. And, you know, I'd been playing since I was six. I think that's when I began taking lessons. But my teacher like taught me how to read music. So I didn't learn how to play music using guitar tab or anything.
Uh-huh.
So like I never really kind of like learned how to play up the neck. I was just playing cowboy chords. And I was, you know, I was good at that. And I was good enough to write songs using those skills. But it took me getting these offers in Nashville to play guitar and then me realizing like, oh, I need to actually learn how to do this, you know, to actually learn how to do it. I think maybe the first gig I got was a woman named Courtney J, who was in LA now, but she had a really cool, like, Hawaiian country vibe. just really, really cool songs and the, you know, great voice. It was great to harmonize with her. And then after that, I got asked to be the house guitarist for like a Tom Petty tribute that used to happen every year in Nashville.
Okay.
And so that was really helpful because Mike Campbell is an amazing guitarist.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's kind of my North Star now, and I've been able to be on the road with him in the past, which has been great. But, you know, I got to learn how those guitar parts work. And yeah. And then I think the thing that kind of got me to be a lead guitarist the most was, you know, just my, I came here playing rhythm guitar, and I learned really quickly in Nashville that you need to kind of have a rotating lineup of musicians if you're going to be on the road a lot, because everybody else is also trying to be on the road a lot, and sure, there's a lot of competition for gigs.
Yep.
So I'd be out with one version of my band for a month, and we'd be really good, and then we'd go home for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, like during the time that we were home, the guy that I had on lead guitar would get hired by Margot Price or something. And so then when we would go out again in a month, he wouldn't be available, so I'd have to get somebody else.
Yeah.
And there just really wasn't a consistent sound with my band other than my voice. And I realized, like, okay, if I'm going to, like, be as active with this band as I want to, it can't just be my voice driving the ship. I've got to, you know, my voice has to also be in my instrument. So I began learning, like, these riffs that were on my own albums and learning the solos. And then eventually I just kind of looked around and realized, like, oh, I'm a lead guitarist now.
Yeah. Right on. And was there ever a time when you were just playing by yourself with an acoustic guitar, like you're going to do in Mexico?
Some. I mean, like, not at the beginning, no. Like, the point of calling it Andrew Leahy and the Homestead, even when I didn't have a lineup behind me, was just I wanted to give the impression that, you know, it's not going to be a guy in a coffee shop on a stool, you know, crossing his leg, you know, playing a bunch of like A and G and D chords. You know, I have done some solo runs, especially if I go over to Europe. You know, I'll do that alone. I'll play Norway every year or so.
Uh-huh.
It's just so expensive and such a logistical nightmare to bring a band over there.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm an extrovert and my brain will just eat itself if I'm on the road without somebody to talk to. And also the whole point of you know, playing music, like, for me is, you know, I need the connectivity, I need the interaction, I need to be around other people. That's kind of part of the whole draw.
Sure.
It's not just the interaction with like artists and audiences, the interaction with the guys or girls in your band and like how tight you can become. So I really prefer to do it with other people if I can, even though that often means that I operate at a loss.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay. I think it's better for the music and it's better for the Andrew.
Yeah, of course. And so the guys that are playing on your record now, are they in your band?
Yeah, the guys who are playing. So the record, the upcoming record, like, it's mostly me and my producer. And I'm doing like most of the keys stuff. You know, I'm not playing any of the drums, but a lot of the drums are programmed. We did kind of what Don Henley would do on Boys of Summer, which is there's kind of a mix of like organic drumming and programmed drumming.
Sure.
On a lot of those songs. But yeah, there's a guy named Jay Dumachowski. He's a great multi-instrumentalist. He's been playing with me since my album Airwaves came out. So I think he's been with me since maybe 2018.
Okay.
And then our longtime drummer, like Dan Holmes, he's on the album. Whenever there's a real guy playing drums, it's him. He recently moved up to Massachusetts, though, which is just another example of the ever-rotating lineup that is my band. Yeah. I've learned to embrace it. it was kind of the just like bane of my existence for a while, but it also means I get to play music with more people and I love doing that. So I'm embracing it.
Yeah. 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 How resilient do you have to be when everybody's like leaving?
You have to not take it personally. And I think if you talk to anybody who's left the band, they will say that I do take it personally, which I'm working on that again. Like, you know, I'm an extrovert and I want everybody to be happy, and it's hard to always be happy on the road too. You know, if you're out and like somebody's in a bad mood, I have to really work to not internalize that and to not tell myself, well, they're in a bad mood and they're on the road with me, so they're on the road because I asked them, so their bad mood is my fault. You know, like in the past, I've really taken on that weight and I should try not to. But, you know, again, I understand that everybody's just out here trying to make a living, and I would love to offer the kind of prices that you can play like 80 gigs a year with me, and that is enough to support you and your family. But it's not enough for me to support me and my family. That's why I've got another career as a music journalist that continues to this day, just so I can pay for everything.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. And are you doing all your own booking? Do you have an agent that books for you?
I used to have an agent. I used to have a manager. currently I do it all myself. It's weird. It's like the pandemic kind of made everybody, take a break and look at what they were doing and reassess. And when we kind of got like back into it, everything was just a little different. The other guitarist in my band, he had two kids. Everything kind of changed. People's availability changed.
Yeah.
And it just made more sense, I thought, for me to have control, over what we did and, when we did it.
Yeah.
It would be great for somebody to take some of this weight off my hands, but I think I'd do it to myself, just wanting to have my cake and eat it too.
Sure, sure. And where are you booking yourself? Like, are you playing tap rooms across the country? Are you playing small clubs? Are you playing, small festivals? What's your strategy?
All arenas, baby.
Yeah, no, but what's your strategy? Like do you, when you're looking, are you looking at routing?
Sure. Yeah. Well, in the past, the band had a great, a 10-year stretch where we played 100 gigs a year, every year. And for not the whole time, but for a lot of that time, I was booking it. And the way I did it back then was, you get your anchor dates, whether it's, like a festival or some kind of like high paying gig, or maybe a market where you know that you can draw. So my markets back then would have been, Nashville, Knoxville, Virginia, New York, DC, a couple places like that. And so you can, I could kind of, put those anchors in and then look at which markets were in between, and then just kind of like use various websites. There's a great one called, is it Indie on the Move? Oh, it's been so long, where, websites that kind of list all the venues and the booking information. And then I would just kind of, string together a 2 to 3 week tour that way. I really prefer to open for people also. We did so many years of, again, playing 100 shows a year, but, maybe only half of them were actually growing the business, and the other half were, okay, great. We get like $1,000 guarantee, but we're playing a barbecue restaurant in Ohio and like nobody is listening.
Yeah.
And is this actually, growing the business at all? And the answer was often no. But if we go out and open for someone, even though the money is usually worse, you get to play for people and you really get to grow something that way.
Yeah.
And so I found like most of that comes from just personal relationships. And then lately, I'll do a thing where like I'll often open a show and then I'll play with the headliner who plays after me. And I like that because I kind of get to do like the best of both worlds. Like for me, like I love to be the guy. I like to be the guy in front at the mic, and I love to be the guy behind the guy, or the guy behind the gal in Elizabeth's case.
Yeah.
So anything, if we go do the Outlaw Cruise, which we do every year with Elizabeth, even though my music really doesn't fit in that genre, like for some reason I get to play it with my band as well.
Uh-huh.
So I'll play with her band and then I'll play with my band. And again, I get to do that juggling act that I like.
And how often are you out with Elizabeth?
It changes. We did, we've got a new album that we are wrapping up. I probably shouldn't give too many details on that, but it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And so once that comes out, I imagine that we'll hit it harder. We used to do more of the just kind of grinding it out kind of, tours where we would headline clubs and whatnot. I think that Elizabeth is prioritizing the opening slots as well these days, which is good for me. I mean, we've, gotten to do some incredible stuff. We did like a really big run with Blackberry Smoke all throughout North America.
Uh-huh.
That was amazing. We got to open for Willie Nelson.
Wow.
Which was just completely nuts. And Mike Campbell was on that run. So that's when I got to meet Mike Campbell and try to play it cool with him. Although I did not play it cool. He told me, like I mentioned earlier, that like Boys of Summer is a song that I modeled a bit of our production on the new album after. Like he and I were talking about that song because I wanted to know how much of that song was complete before he brought it to Don.
Yeah.
And he said musically it was, it was all complete. He had everything locked into place, and that he played it for Don Henley, and Don Henley put some words to it, and they recorded it all, And then like Don Henley kind of sat with it and realized that he wanted it to be in a higher key. So they scrapped everything and re-recorded it, which means somewhere there's a version of Boys of Summer in a lower key. And I would like refinance my house just to be able to hear that because I love that song.
Of course. And so when you're doing your gigs, yeah. I saw a white Strat and I saw a white Les Paul studio maybe, but the... What do you? Yeah. What's your gear look like?
I love that Les Paul.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous guitar. What's your gear look like in general?
So that Les Paul is my workhouse.
Okay.
It depends. It depends how much I can bring. If I can bring everything, if it's not like a fly date or something, then I'll try to bring like three guitars. I'll bring the Les Paul, which I was just trying to go through it in my head. I think everything is, just how I bought it, apart from the tuners. We put in new tuners, and Mike signed the front of it. I thought he was going to sign the back, but he signed the front. So that's new. But everything else, I think it's just kind of like how it was out of the box when I bought it in 2010, I think.
Okay.
So I'll bring that, and that, I'll play that for maybe like 80% of the show. Then I've got a Tele, a Candy Red Tele that I got in the early 2010s. And I'll play that. Like, it also has like a Strat pickup in it. So before I got a Strat of my own, I like the Tele because it could do the Tele thing, but could also kind of like do the squawky Strat thing, which, is quite important with my new album because it's really 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've got an Epiphone Sheraton that I've done so much work to. It's got new tuners. It's got a Mastery Bridge. It's got a Bigsby. It's got Lawler pickups in it.
Wow.
And I usually would do alternate tunings on that. I've got a song called a song called Stay Awake where I tune both of the E strings down to E.
Wow.
Both of the E strings down to D, kind of make it sound like a Neil Young thing.
Yep.
And so rather than like talk to the audience while I'm tuning my guitar, I'll keep the Sheraton in that tuning. Which, means I only use it for one song, but it's worth it for me to bring that out. And then if I'm out with Elizabeth and we're flying or something, I'll just bring the Les Paul. And then my pedal board is really what's important to me. I can kind of get, my tone out of any amp. If I'm bringing my own amp, I'll bring an AC30, even though it's hell on my back. if I'm playing a smaller show in town, it's like sometimes you feel like a jerk for walking into like the basement in Nashville, which is like capacity 120 with an AC30. So I'll bring a Blues Junior in that case. But If I'm flying, if I'm using backline or something, I can generally get whatever I need on my pedal board because I've got like a lot of pedals on that thing.
Like, what does the pedal chain look like?
I've got three different boosts. I've got like a Bogner Harlow pedal, which has a compressor in it. It can get really, really loud.
Uh-huh.
I've got a Greer Lightspeed, which is also great. And I've got like a Benson preamp. So like all three of those kind of do similar things, but it allows me to have like a multiple gain stage approach, which I like. Like a reverb is really awesome for me. So I've got like a Strymon Flint that also has the like a tremolo option. I've got a Maxon chorus pedal. What else do I have? I've got a is it Ernie Ball? It's both. It's kind of like an expression pedal, but it's a tuner and a volume swell.
Oh wow!
And so like that way I can kind of get some, kind of cool like pedal steel vibes if I need. And then for delay, I've got I think it's the L Cap, also a Strymon.
Yeah.
And then like my number one pedal, I haven't brought it up because I'm kind of blanking on the name. I think it's called the Mercury 7. It's a Marish pedal. It's a reverb pedal that's modeled after the soundtrack for Blade Runner. But it can, just get these really kind of like icy reverb tones. And you can hold it down and kind of oscillate the reverb and, create a big swell. So if you're trying to make, crazy sounds as the song is swelling in or something, you can just like make a cathedral of reverb with that.
Sure, sure.
And your listeners are probably going to be like, I can't believe he messed that up.
Oh, it's okay.
But it's been like a week or so since I've played it, and apparently that's too long. I've forgotten.
and did you put your pedal board together, or did you have did you have Exactone do it for you? Or
I had a place in Nashville called Eastside Music Supply put it together, and it's really, really clean. There is some kind of ghost in it, and just like every once in a while, just like it doesn't work. You don't know why it doesn't work.
No.
But I know that if I put it all together myself, it would have either, you know, it would have even more ghosts if I was in charge of it. So yeah, I like for someone else to be in charge of it. And that's kind of how I feel about my guitars too. Like I like to bring them in and get them set up, I don't know, twice a year, which might be overkill, but you know, I prefer just to do the preventative maintenance rather than something going wrong and you're on the road and all of a sudden it's your problem. Yeah. Just because I'm not really tech minded. Sure. You know?
And yeah. Do you take it to Eastside as well, or where do you take your guitars?
When I'm taking them to get them worked on, I go to this place called Music City Vintage Guitars. There's a great a tech there named Gerald, not Gerald, Gerald. And it's spelled like gear with an LD on the end. So I feel like it's just, you know, kismet. He's got gear in the name.
Yeah.
And he's amazing. And, you know, when Mike signed my guitar, I wanted to get it refinished. I took it to a place called Rumble Seat Music and had them, you know, kind of refinish it. Because otherwise, I mean, I sweat so much when I'm playing, I'd rub that off in 3 gigs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I can't have that.
Elliot at Rumble Seat. The yeah. Was when you were out with Mike, was Chinner teching? Chinner teching for him?
He was, and he's such a nice guy. He wasn't with Mike when a couple weeks ago I saw him at the Ryman. I don't know if he's retired. Like, he's all over Mike's new book too. I don't know if you've read that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like Chinner is amazing. Like, if you know, and you know, like, if for those who aren't listening, I think he began with the Georgia Satellites in the 80s. I think that was kind of his career path, and then he joined up with the Heartbreakers, I think in the, I don't know, the like Into the Great Wide Open tour. You know, he was with them for the last 25 years of their career. And just like, what an amazing, you know, what amazing like a view to have to watch that band from side stage. He's a great guy. I hear he makes really good hot sauce too, but I haven't had any yet.
Neither have I. So the album comes out, and it comes out on the 31st of October. Am I correct?
Yeah, Halloween.
Okay, cool. Any reason? Any reason for that release date? Or
no? You know, the last record that I put out was actually like a double album. You know, we broke it up into two halves, but it was 19 tracks, and it just kind of went all over the place. You know, in a way that I liked. I think I was trying to establish that I wasn't just like the Americana guy. You know, I love Americana music, but again, it's not the totality of what I listen to. You know, but that record, which was called American Static, it took so long to make. And I think we put that out in 2021 and 2022. And then I've just, you know, I've been busy with Elizabeth. We did this new album. I've been playing with a guy named Stan Outlaw. I've been playing with a woman named Hannah Aldridge. It just, I don't know. It kind of like, I realized that, a couple months ago, I realized that if I wanted to put this album out, you know, this album of mine out in 2025, I would just have to hurry. And October 31st was like one of the last available like dates where we could kind of make it work and like, you know, put some advanced songs out beforehand. But it's also, you know, we chose that, time period because I'll be in Europe for about 2 months. I leave October 7th, and I don't come back until November 26th. So I'm playing a bunch of shows over there, and I'm doing kind of what I mentioned to you before, the ideal, you know, Andrew Leahy thing where I'm opening up and I'm playing for the headliner. And I'm doing that for Sam Outlaw. I'm doing that for this Australian band called The Pleasures, and I'm doing that for Hannah Aldridge.
Wow.
So, you know, it's basically like three different tours that are all one after another. So I just wanted to put out the album while I was in that mode of playing a lot rather than, you know, I come home and, you know, kind of cool my heels for a bit and then the record comes out. I wanted it to come out while the momentum was happening.
Sure. And are you going to do a solo tour after the fact, or are you going to continue with that motif where you're opening shows for people that you're playing for?
I mean, I'll take anything I can get. It's weird because if I had to choose kind of one aspect of my musical career, you know, if I had to like say like, you know, like you can only play with Andrew Leahy in the Homestead, or you can only play as like the right hand man or the band leader for other people, of course I would choose my own music. But like years ago, right when I was beginning to get offers to play for other people, and I wasn't sure how to feel about it, and I was worried that it was somehow like a disservice to my own songwriting career if I played for other people.
Yep.
I talked to this guy named Neil Casal, if you know who he is,
of course.
A wonderful writer.
Yep.
Like he's no longer with us, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but you know, like as you know, then you know, he had a wonderful career of his own, but he also played with the Ryan Adams, he played with Chris Roberts in Brotherhood, he played with Hardworking Americans. And I was interviewing him for, I think, American Songwriter, and I mentioned like, oh, I also play, and I'm getting these other offers to play with other artists, and you know, like, you're a person who's kind of like really, you know, like, you've like managed like that juggling act in a beautiful way, would you have any advice for me? And he said, yeah, you should absolutely play for other people. You know, it's like very communal and circulator and, you know, collaborative. And like each project that you're a part of can inform the next. And he gave me good advice. He said, when you're playing with other people, you should always be in their band, the kind of person you would want to have in your own band.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so like I internalized that as like, you know, it's like know when to harmonize, like know when to play. And more importantly, know when you shouldn't play. So I really, you know, I take a lot of pride in kind of being that musician for other people. So if offers next year come in to, well, like I'll play any Elizabeth Cook offer that we get. I'm really wedded to that gig. I love being her longtime guitarist. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, but I need to get out there and play my own stuff. And I love playing this kind of music on my new record live. Like it, you know, like it requires a keyboard, so we have an extra person in the band, and going from 4 to 5 people in a band, you know, it might as well be going from like 4 to 20. Like it just really exponentially increases what you can do musically.
Yeah.
And just like, it feels so musical to me. I love that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely need to create some more opportunities. And again, it's not about the money. It's not about, it's, you know, it's only about the music. And I will, you know, I'll write as many articles on other bands as it takes in order to have the money to go out with my band, you know, and do it the right way.
Yeah. And what do you think about if there was a young musician, perhaps a songwriter, that was looking like looking for the next step, would you suggest they move to Nashville at this point? Or would you say, hey, you might be better where you are?
I mean, it's, I guess it depends on what kind of artist they are. I mean, I think I may be a little too old school in my ways. I mean, I feel like, you know, I came to Nashville because I knew that it would kick my ass in a good way, and it would make me able to kick back eventually. You know, because, you know, I had already, you know, when I came here, I was already 29. You know, I'd spent a lot of my 20s working as a music journalist and writing songs in my bedroom.
Yeah.
But I felt like I had some lost time I needed to make up for. So I didn't want to go anywhere else. I wanted to go to a music place like Austin or L.A. or New York or Nashville, and Nashville won out. I mean, I know nowadays you can launch a career from TikTok. Like, that's not really my world. I don't know much about that. I think maybe there is an argument to be made for that, to say, you know, you can get a very large audience in 1 week on TikTok, and it would take you a year or two of like touring your ass off to get that the old school way. I think the old school way is the more genuine way, maybe the the more artistic way. So it just, it depends on what this artist wants. If they want to get signed, you can do that from the moon if you have a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to be the best musician they can be, if they want to play with other amazing musicians, then yeah, Nashville is a good place to go to. It's not the only place to go to, but a good one. And it's not just a country town.
Yeah.
If it was, I would be lost because I don't know a lot about country music. Even though I play for a country artist, I don't know a lot about it. and I don't play that way.
Yeah, yeah. Apart from all the music stuff and like, and you know, and managing yourself and doing all the writing and stuff, what do you do for fun?
Man, I mean, it's hard when, you know, what you do for fun is also what you do for a living. I mean, it's beautiful as well, but when you make like your passion your occupation, there, you know, are pros and cons to that. But in general, I need to keep myself sane because I am an artist. I take everything way too seriously. I'm kind of a raw nerve. I get way too upset by like things that people say, even if they don't intend to upset me. So I try to prioritize stuff that will calm me down. I'm really into yoga. It's not a thing that I thought I would be into, but a couple of years ago, my wife asked me to go, and I've become an addict for it. It's, you know, it's a good addiction to have.
Sure.
So it's basically music, work, and yoga, and hanging out with the people I like to hang out with.
Yeah, yeah. And any type of yoga that you prefer, like, are you like the hot yoga guy, or are you, or like the more the relaxing kind of yoga?
I am a hot yoga guy.
All right, right on.
No, I'm the hot yoga guy. I mean, it's intense. I have some friends who want to come and join me, and I'm like, I mean, yeah, it gets pretty gross in there, but it's really the only thing, apart from playing a gig, it's the only thing that can get my head out of whatever rut it's in, what, or kind of whatever cycle I'm in, you know, whatever thought I cannot get out of my head.
Yeah.
If I go to high yoga, it gets it out of there. Just, you need to kind of be in the moment or you're going to fall, and you're sweaty, there's water everywhere, it's slippery. You just like, you need to be mindful. Yeah, I'm not good at being present. I'm always trying to plan for the worst case scenario or plan multiple steps ahead. But, you know, with yoga, it's just like, okay, I need to put my arms up. I can do that. Gotta, you know, like put my leg over here. You know, okay, I can do that. Right. It's a good lesson for me.
Yeah. Is there a particular yoga place you go to? Like, do you go to Core Power? I mean, like, Core Power is a chain, so like you could go at, you know, many stops during your tour. But are there any, is there a particular place you go?
No, I love, yeah, and I love that I get to give them a shout out because, you know, my album, Kick, Move, Shake, like that, you know, that title is kind of like a paraphrase thing that my yoga teacher will say after we go out of this one move into another. I think it's when we go out of a move called Pigeon, which is,
sure,
you know, kind of like a hip opener, but it's kind of intense, like for your leg. And so afterwards, he's like, okay, if you, like he says, if you need to kick, move, or shake your leg around after that, you can. So I named the album after that, just kind of because I wrote the record, you know, like during the period of, you know, I'm learning to kind of calm down. I'm learning to like do a little bit more of what I want, and yoga's been a part of that. But the place that I go to, it's on Music Row, and it's called Shakti Yoga, or it might be called Shakti Power Yoga.
Okay.
But yeah, it changed my life. So
right on.
Go Shakti.
Excellent.
Give me a discount.
And so if people want to find you,
yeah,
you have a website. Do you want to tell them what it is?
Yeah, it's Andrew Leahy Music. And I know that, you know, at the beginning of the episodes, I listened to you. I did my homework and like you spell out the names and I appreciate that. But I'll do it here as well. Leahy is spelled L-E-A-H-E-Y. And, you know, I don't put up there the gigs I'm playing with other people. But if you also want to like check out the full circle of what I do, you can, you know, go listen to Elizabeth Cook, look at her website, listen to Sam Outlaw and his website, Hannah Aldridge, my friend John Latham. And then every year in Nashville, every January, we do a big show at the end of the month. It's a tribute to the Traveling Wilburys. All the money goes to charity, and kind of an expanded version of my band is the house band. It's like a 9-member house band.
Right on.
And then we get a bunch of guests who come up and do 1 or 2 songs each. And that's kind of like my top show of the year. We sell it out every year. And we, you know, last year we had John Oates from Hall & Oates. We had Butch Walker.
Wow.
Just like a ton of amazing musicians. And again, I get to do the thing where like I'm the guy. I get to, you know, play a bunch of songs myself. But then I get to back up all these other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of get to be in a band, you know, for like 2 songs with John Oates. Get to be in a band for 2 songs with Butch Walker.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So that's always at the end of January. And I do list that on my website so people can find that there.
Right on. Right on. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Andrew. I really appreciate your time. And if you ever make it out,
likewise, man.
If you make it out to Northern California,
I'm a fan. I listen to you.
Oh, well, thanks. You're the one. You're the guy. If you make it out to Northern California, I'd love to meet you in person.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Where are you in Northern California? Can you say on the podcast?
Sure. I'm in Napa. There, I say it many times.
Beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. I get. I used to have in-laws who lived up that way, and they've moved now to Southern California, but. You know, any excuse to get up to Northern California is a good excuse. So I'll try to come up with one and I'll, you know, come say hi. We'll grab a coffee or something.
Excellent.
Can hang out in your garage there.
Yes, exactly. You're welcome to anytime. Okay, Andrew, nice talking to you.
All right, buddy.
All right, see bye-bye. You, James.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.